It's the truth. Universally acknowledged that these droids may not pass.
If you're done goofing around, can we get to like the real introduction? Let's start this podcast. And I'm the other Shah, new and improved. I'm not an imitation or an imposter. We just happen to have very similar names. Well, the beginning of our names are exactly the same, which is why I am now going to go by Shah 2.0.
That's an insult right there.
But we're moving on. And you're listening to Nerdum Say, a podcast where two girls with an overactive imagination take on a geeky journey through fiction. This is episode 2. We're calling it People of Pride and Prejudice, otherwise known as PPP, or Triple P for those cool kids.
What cool kids are you thinking of?
Us.
All right. Before we actually start with our podcast, I just want to take a little time to say thank you to everyone who listened to episode 0 and episode number 1, and everyone who reached out to us and told us that they had a blast listening to us, and a lot of our friends who even tried to join the conversation when they were listening. That was absolutely hilarious. But thank you. We're really touched, and I hope to see you sticking on with us. Also, if you liked it, please share it with your friends and your family and force them to listen as well.
Yeah. And you never know what, you know, who you're going to convert with these podcasts. You'll get some new nerd friends, to be honest.
Yeah, actually, that's so true. So Pride and Prejudice. All right. So we are going to attempt to summarize it in about 3 minutes, let's say. It's not a competition. We're just going to try. For people who have been living under a rock and have never read the book or watched the movies before. All right. So, okay, I'm actually looking at the timer. That's how competitive I am. This is bad.
Please don't take out your stopwatch and time us, please. We do that to ourselves enough.
Somewhere in England, there's a place called Longbourn Estate where there are 5 girls living there with their parents. And they consist of Jane, the pretty one, Elizabeth, the funny one, Mary, the goth child, let's be honest, Kitty and Lydia, who are essentially the same person, both just brats. And heads up, they're all between the ages of 15 to 22. So if you've heard that this book is entirely about marriage and you're slightly creeped out, stick with us. We'll explain about that a little later. And then there's Mr. Bennett, who's reticent, and Mrs. Bennett, who's just obsessed with marriage. And then one fine day, a nice gentleman by the name of Mr. Bingley moves in nearby to them. They go to a ball, they meet him and his two sisters, who are honestly just grumpy bitches, and his really rich friend, Mr. Darcy, who's also a grumpy cow. And then after the ball, Jane gets invited to have tea with the Bingley sisters, but she gets sick because she's caught in the rain, and then Elizabeth walks all over to nurse on her. And then Darcy realizes that he actually does like her, even though initially he said he didn't, because she had pretty eyes. And what happens next, Sharnia?
Okay, so they head back home and they live happily ever after. That's the end. No, I'm kidding. Then Mr. Colin comes over.
Before that, they meet Wickham back home.
So yes, they meet Mr. Wickham.
Basically, Elizabeth likes him. She discovers that he hates Darcy, so she likes him even more because she doesn't like Darcy. And then Mr. Collins comes over, who's like a distant relative, and he's to inherit their estate when the father dies. He turns out to be a weird, inappropriate, idiotic git. He proposes to Lizzie at some point. She says no, he doesn't believe her. He goes snooping around the neighborhood and then he proposes to Charlotte, who accepts. And then they have another ball. They have another ball where Mr. Wickham doesn't show up. Elizabeth's sad. Darcy dances with her. They both have an argument about Wickham. Yep. Jane and Bingley are really happy. They go back. Suddenly, after like a week or so, Mr. Bingley very abruptly leaves town and is said that he's not going to return. Jane's upset. Jane goes away. Elizabeth goes away to visit Charlotte and she meets Lady Catherine, who's also another cow. And Mr. Darcy's there as well. Mr. Darcy's like, I hate your family, but please marry me. Lizzie's like, GTFO.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Which props to her. Like, he was like, I like you despite my better judgment. Fuck you.
That is so rude. Anyway, and then Lizzie goes back. She gets invited by her aunt and uncle to like tour around the Lake District, but they don't actually go to the Lake District. They end up going to Pemberley. Oh, no, wait. Before that, Darcy writes a letter where he tries to justify himself against Wickham. And then she goes to Pemberley. She falls in love with the place. And then all his, like, his housekeeper says really nice things about him. She finds out that Lydia runs away with Wickham. And they go back to Longbourn. They find out later on that Darcy actually helped to settle Lydia and Wickham. He tried to, like, dissuade Lydia from marrying Wickham, but she insisted that she wanted to, so he paid him off, blah, 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 got them married, came back. And then literally everyone comes back after that. Bingley comes back because Darcy confesses what he's done. And everyone does indeed live happily ever after.
The end. A lot of emotions were left out, but that we'll get to that.
Cool. So before we actually get into Pride and Prejudice, I have a mini pop quiz for you, Sharanya. Are you ready?
Yeah, absolutely not. But go for it.
When we decided that we're going to talk about Pride and Prejudice for this episode, I dug out my A-levels notes. I was asked to do a one-page essay, but I did a five-page. So
you're such a Hermione.
I know. I have a lot of notes. Okay, anyway. So when was Pride and Prejudice published?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I know when it was set. I'm assuming it's around the same period or a little bit, well, obviously a little bit later, can't be before. Although, how cool would that be? Very Orwellian, but no, I'm not sure. I really don't know. I'm assuming somewhere in the 1800s. Yeah.
Yeah, 1813. Okay, cool. All right. So this is obviously the Regency era. So what do you know about the Regency era? Why is it called the Regency era when the time before was called the Georgian era and the time later on was called the Victorian era? Was there a king regent?
I think, well, obviously you would know better, but from the Regency, because you did an entire five-page essay on it, but I don't know why it's called Regency era. I don't know why it's called Regency era. But yeah, so I think like my general understanding of that era is land ownership, the huge, I guess, disparity in wealth, in rights.
That's very true. There was a big disparity. Also, that sort of leads to the king. So the Regency era came about because King George III, for most of his reign, he was unwell. He had a genetic disorder. Well, at that point, they didn't know what it was. So they just called him the Insane King. He's also well known for losing America. So that's when the American Revolution happened. And I think towards the later part of his life, he was seriously unfit to rule. So his son had to rule in his place. And that's always called the Prince Regent. When someone rules, when the king's away or the king's unwell or the king is too young, so then there's a Prince Regent who rules in their stead. And so Prince George, who later becomes King George IV, ruled in this time period. That's why it's called the Regency era. You're right. Like, a lot of advancements did happen during this period. So he's known for spending a lot of money into the arts, into architecture as well. But that also meant that there was a lot of poverty in other areas. That's how the era got its name. And what other eventful things happened during this era? Do you know any other cool stuff that happened during this time?
Well, we can always start rapping Hamilton.
Was Hamilton during the Regency era?
Well, I mean, he helped bring America's freedom and independence.
Okay. Yeah, very cool. Yeah. Besides that?
It was, I guess it was, I mean, probably just a little bit before the war with France. Before a little bit before the French Revolution, or probably alongside that. Of course, my dates are very... a little all over the place. I haven't studied history in a while, but The timelines add up, okay? Don't go fact-checking me. Yeah, I think, well, that's honestly all I can remember about...
Okay, let me fill you in. So,
yes, fill me in.
Charles Dickens was born, and then obviously Pride and Prejudice was published. Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein during this period.
Yes, that's true. That's true, that's true.
Right, and Ivanhoe was also written during this period. Oh, just a little medical tangent, because... I obviously have doctor friends listening and I need to give them something. During this period, practices in obstetrics changed because King George IV, his daughter, Princess Charlotte, died of childbirth. And it was quite gruesome. It was a triple death. So she died and then she actually gave birth to a stillborn baby, because during this time frame, they sort of believed that intervening during childbirth, like what we have now, like forceps or cesarean sections, were crude. So they just let her be in labor for like 50 hours. And then her physician committed suicide later because he was under a lot of pressure. Yeah. So after that, you know, they began giving anesthesia during labor, also doing cesarean sections. So cool medical information right there.
So the 1800s, there were so many prominent artists from this era, is because it was called, it was the period of Romanticism.
Yes.
So you had a lot of these amazing artists who were very anti-science. Frankenstein, maybe we should do an episode on that, but it is basically a cautionary tale against science, if you think about it.
All right. So let's get started with the people of Pride and Prejudice, starting with Mrs. Bennet. So, Sharanya, what do you think about Mrs. Bennet?
Oh, dear. I think she's a very smart woman.
Oh, but I have to disagree right there.
Let me just explain what I mean by she's a very smart woman. I think she's smart in the sense, obviously, she's not very highly educated, and that's not something that she's interested in either. Doesn't seem like it, anyway.
It's also not possible for women to be very highly educated.
Yeah, it's not possible either. Yeah. I feel like if she was more productive with her intelligence, she could achieve a lot more different as well. But the reason I say she's intelligent is because... she knew how to manipulate. She knew how to. She's kind of a social climber, to be honest. Even, I mean, technically, she was a social class below Mr. Bennet. Anyways, so she that's one thing. But I think the way she told Jane not to take the carriage to the Bingleys, for example, I would say that's pretty despicable. But the fact that she had the foresight, especially because back then it was super risky, right? Like you said, you know, even a cold could kill them. But she had the foresight that, oh, she'll get stuck over there without a carriage, so she's gonna ride horseback. Moments like that, when you can see that she's really kind of like, her brain is working, it's ticking, there's something going on there. It's just it's not done in a way that's productive. Yeah, that's my argument for saying that Mrs. Bennet is, maybe intelligence, the wrong word, cunning, might be better suited. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but go ahead and yell at me now.
Well, I don't like her, that's to say the least. And it's not in my nature to call someone stupid, but I do think, like, in this time period, intelligence is something that's a little different from what we consider intelligence now. Mainly because, especially women, because women are not really allowed to hold a profession. They are educated, but only up to like a basic level. And it's also sort of dependent on whether or not you have the means to get them like a governess or send them to town, which something that Lady Catherine points out is missing in the Bennet sisters, right? So it's a little difficult to determine whether or not Mrs. Bennet was intelligent based on that, but I think it's painfully obvious that Jane Austen thinks that she's not. A lot of descriptions of Mrs. Bennet uses a lot of very derogatory terms, like saying that she has very mean intelligence. She doesn't even understand how she feels, so she just keeps saying that she's nervous all the time. And Mr. Bennet mocks her constantly. So, but what I don't like about her is she comes off very crude. She doesn't really know how to carry herself in public. And, like, there are people who just let loose and have a good time. And she's not one of them. She's constantly bragging about Jane's beauty, And then she talks shit about Charlotte, about how she's not pretty enough, that's why she's going to be single. Those things really got to me, so I found it really annoying. But it's interesting, like, when you watch adaptations on Pride and Prejudice, there are different portrayals of a character, and I think the one that I liked the best was in Lost in Austin. So it's like a... and Alex Kingston, who is River Song in Doctor Who, plays Mrs. Bennett. There she seems to have a bit more of purpose compared to the books and also the BBC adaptation or the movie, where she just comes off as being really annoying, and the only thing she wants and cares about is to get her daughters married. But in Lost in Austin, you sort of see her purpose, because it makes sense. Like, they're not going to get anything once Mr. Bennett dies. They're literally going to be destitute and without a lot of money. So her schemes of trying to get them married to people who have a little money sort of makes sense. And so I guess I can understand where she's coming from, but I can't say I really like her methods or her general demeanor. She just annoys me constantly.
For sure. I completely agree. I'm not a fan of... Although, I mean, the thing you said about how her daughters would end up destitute, right? That does come up in the movie as well. So it's been a while since I've read the book. But it does come up in the movie as well when Mr. Bennett talks and, like, asks her why she's so worried about getting her daughters married off, and she's like, once you're gone, we're all gonna be left penniless. Like, none of this is gonna come to us. And she gets particularly antagonized when Mr. Colin is introduced, and I think he's very important to really drive the point that women had nothing, even when they had this, like, the only security they had was of their father, and, like, they were left to the mercy of their father or their cousin or their, like, if they didn't have that, they had nothing. Which, honestly, it makes me want to go into talking about Handmaid's Tale, but that's a whole other, that's like a whole other thing. I it doesn't justify how she behaves at all. Like,
what's important here is the lack of foresight that Mr. Bennett, you know, didn't show, obviously, because he also talks about how he should have saved for his daughters, because that's another way that they could have had a bit more money. And so, and he also doesn't seem to take active participation in any of this, which makes sense, because it really comes off silly a lot of times, the way they fawn over men. But like, it doesn't seem like he thinks much about what's going to happen to his family once he dies. He's just, like, not bothered at all. Or it seems that way. And also, I did a quick Google search. So the one who's a lawyer is actually Mrs. Bennett's father. He was a lawyer.
Mr. Bennett
also made his money from landed gentry. So, but just that he owned just Longbourn. And that was, like, what? I think he earned, he had an earning of £2,000 a year, which is really not much.
It's not much. And especially with five kids, my God.
But what's interesting is that social class and wealth, they're not really mutually exclusive during this period. So like, if you were if you had land, that sort of made you sort of second class if you had a large income. So Mr. Bennett was in fact, you know, like, a second class in this society, which to some extent puts him at the same class as Mr. Darcy, which is interesting, because when Lady Catherine comes over later on to convince or to try to force Elizabeth not to form an alliance with him, she says that they're of equal class because Mr. Darcy is a gentleman and she's a gentleman's daughter. And I never got that, and now it makes sense. And also, what's interesting to note is the Bingleys were not in this social class. They were actually considered third class because they were children of a trade merchant, and that's how they got all their money. But I think you can jump a class if you make investments, and I think Bingley does that in the end when he purchases an estate that's kind of close to Pemberley. So
I think to add on to the whole Mrs. Bennett thing, since we're on her right now, and I know this is something we both wanted to talk about, the way she flips, like, when Lydia runs away, she's, you know, bedridden. She goes into, my nerves. Oh my God, what am I going to do? And then she finds out Lydia's married, and she immediately flips into, like, oh my God, my daughter married at 15. She's settled. I have, like, two girls out. One, like, one is married, one is engaged. And I just, the way she flips,
I know, exactly. Jane Austen obviously did that intentionally.
Yeah.
She does it intentionally to show like how ridiculous the whole idea is. With the desperation to get their girls married off.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's not just Mrs. Bennet. I'm sure a lot of other women, mothers were like that. But yeah, I think that was just such a, that scene was so well done. The way she just completely flips.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. Chef's kiss.
It's kind of surprising. So like Mrs. Bennet has a sister, right? Mrs. Phillips. She sounds more or less just like Mrs. Bennet. But her brother, Mr. Gardiner and Mrs. Gardiner, they somehow come off much better. They seem a lot more sensible and they don't lose their heads as often. And like even Darcy can have a conversation with them without cringing. I think that's kind of remarkable, especially since Mr. Gardiner is in trade and they keep making, like the Bingleys make fun of that, like him being of a lower class. And that that's something that we need to talk about when we come to Caroline Bingley, because dude, like you're in third class as well. Why are you, what are you looking down on other people for? Like it's so gross.
So wrong.
I know. Anyway, moving on.
Charlotte, who is Lizzie's BFFL. I don't know if they had that concept back then, but they were BFFLs. She is older. She is 27. Yep.
Older. They make it sound like she's 50.
They talk about how she has no prospects anymore. She herself talks about how she has no prospects. She's a burden to her family.
But I think that's more to do with the fact that she doesn't have money as opposed to her being plain in looks. Because just look at this entire story. To some extent, how they look, how they carry themselves really doesn't matter. It almost seems as if money is everything. So I think her being a burden to her parents is because it's also the parents' fault because they didn't save enough money for her. You know, she doesn't come with a dowry or anything that's significant.
And right. Also, she doesn't have the wealth or the status.
Yeah. And I think so after that, then people talk about her look. There's a contrast there between Jane, Elizabeth and Charlotte. Like Jane and Elizabeth also don't have any money, but they still find partners because they are pretty, I guess.
Yeah.
And witty. Yeah.
That's true. And I guess, like you said, the Bennets are still second class. So there is some status there. Yeah, but Charlotte, I mean, I really liked Charlotte's character. So going by the movie, especially what I liked was when they overhear Darcy bad-mouthing
Lizzie
and says, you know, tells Bingley you have the only pretty girl. And even when Bingley was being very nice and very kind to Elizabeth and said, you know, she's also really nice, and Darcy just shoots it down. And I think the way Charlotte handles that and says, at least you don't have to, like, he's so snobby, you don't have to put up with him. And I think that's she's being a really good friend. She doesn't let that affect Lizzie's self-worth. And I feel like Lizzie didn't give that same support to Charlotte when Charlotte said she wanted to marry Collins.
Yeah, but the context is different, isn't it? Mr. Darcy
is
not wanting to dance with us. There's a dance. Charlotte marrying Collins is something that you can't take back in those days, right? And he is absolutely ridiculous.
He is so ridiculous.
Have you actually watched Lost in Austin?
I have not.
Okay. Oh my God, you really have to. I can't believe you're doing this episode and you haven't watched it. It's so cool. Basically, the premise is this girl in modern day London is really in love with Pride and Prejudice, and she manages to find a door in a house that's like a connection between Pride and Prejudice world and her house. So she and Elizabeth Bennet switch places. And so she goes through like the whole motions of Pride and Prejudice, trying to ensure that everyone stays in character. But it's very difficult because she's not Elizabeth, right? And so a lot of things happen. It's really funny. So the first thing that happens is Mr. Bingley falls in love with her. And in order for, her name's Amanda Price. So in order to get him to fall in love with Jane, she lies to him and says that she's a lesbian. But she's
God, that's amazing.
It is. But she's falling in love with Darcy, even though Darcy is like a complete ass to everyone around there. When Jane falls sick, she gives her paracetamol, and then Bingley thinks like she's something like a magic. She's like, Miss Price has to stay here. She has the paracetamols, which is also a brilliant moment. Yeah, Mr. Collins, so he's absolutely disgusting. He does this thing where he puts his hand in his pants and then sniffs his hand. It's so gross. Like, they really go all out to make his character absolutely repugnant. So I really hated him watching that. But yeah, I think he does marry Charlotte, even in that. So a lot of things don't actually go to plan in that series. So you can't help but feel bad for Charlotte because he's such an idiot. And the way that he looks up to Lady Catherine, oh, it's so gross.
Yeah, it's really... the way he worships Lady Catherine is just, that's not healthy. There's definitely some weird Freudian shit right there, but like some weird maternal attachment that he hasn't figured out. I think Charlotte, despite not being a main character, I think I love her so much. She's just so sweet. She's such a good friend. She's not a main character. She doesn't have a lot of lines, but you can still, whenever she is there, like, you can sense how good a friend she is, how good a person she is. And I think she's sort of the epitome of like how unfair that entire era is. And in a very intersectional way, right? It's not just because she's a woman. It's because she's a woman with no status, with no wealth. And you can really see the different layers. And she's an older woman, older, air quotes, woman who
apparently you can is not very pretty.
Yeah, so you can see, like, the different layers of disadvantage that she has to go through. And
injustice.
Injustice. And, like, despite all of that, she's such a humble, such a nice person, and she still seems fairly optimistic as a person. So I really like Charlotte.
Yeah. And speaking of Charlotte, I also really like Jane. I think Jane's really sweet. She isn't someone who offends anybody. She thinks the best of everyone, which didn't really work in her favor initially, especially with regards to, like, Caroline Bingley. But she's just so sweet, and she's just such a nice person. And it's kind of shocking. Like, you look at all the Bennet girls as a whole, you don't really see how Jane and Elizabeth came off the better ones compared to the rest of them. So it's nice to know that Elizabeth had, like, a sister who's also sensible like her.
Although I feel like maybe it comes with age. So I feel like Jane and Elizabeth are obviously a little more sorted than the others. Mary, she is a little bit of a mess, but honestly, she's very intelligent. She loves reading. She's introverted. She's not into being out in society like the other girls.
Let's be real. Mary has middle child syndrome. It's like
she does.
Yeah, she's just trying to be seen some way or the other.
Yeah, and she doesn't have a partner because Lydia and Kitty have each other and Jane and Lizzie have each other, and Mary really doesn't have anyone. Yeah. So she is a little introverted as well, and that's totally fine.
I can totally see her as a goth character.
Yeah, but I think Mary is sort of starting to come on her own. Kitty and Lydia are very, very young. Like, especially Lydia, she's 15.
Yeah.
Her hormones are running wild.
I guess
it doesn't excuse anything, but I think, like, I'm hoping
it certainly gives them a little bit more allowance for being so idiotic because they're young.
Anywho, plus they all have their own personalities. You can't have them all be sensible. since we were on Charlotte and Collins and we did talk about the weird Freudian attachment that Collins has, we should probably get to Lady Catherine.
I think for someone who is a lady, which puts her probably in the highest orders or the top part of the second class, she behaves so poorly.
She does.
She's really rude, which was just shocking because you would think that someone who prides themselves of being an upper class, you know, member of society would behave better, but she just bears, you know, evidence of someone who has something that they call ill breeding, right? It's just so rude, very impertinent, and she literally expects everyone to do as she says. It's so annoying.
Yeah, very entitled. Mm. I think in terms of behavior, so what I would say is that she behaves the right way in terms of society, like obviously in terms of etiquette. That's so, for example, she told Collins that he can't sit right next to his wife, he has to sit across her. And so she knows the right etiquette, and obviously that's what she follows. But just because you follow etiquette doesn't automatically make you someone that's well behaved.
Yeah,
and it doesn't automatically give you the right attitude. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan. I don't think anyone is.
No, but I think Judi Dench played her really well. She just came off as a really haughty mm-hmm. peacock. The way they styled her hair and her clothes.
Yeah. I think the thing that annoyed me most about Lady Catherine, and I think we can use this as a segue to Darcy, is the expectations she has of a woman about, you know, how you should be able to learn to play the piano, you should have a governess. Mm. So I guess another thing about Lady Catherine, and I guess we can use this to segue into talking about Mr. Darcy, is her expectations of a woman and what is defined as an accomplished woman. The fact that she needs to be musically talented, she needs to be poised, she needs to be, that you need to have a governess. And that you can't, I mean, the way she looked down on the Bennets for having all five sisters out in society at once without a single one of them married. You know, the general expectation that she has of a woman, and she really does look down on the Bennet sisters so much because she thinks they're not, she actually ironically thinks they're not well behaved according to society because they don't follow a certain etiquette.
Yes, that's not very, that doesn't sit well with anyone, does it? But I have to say, as much as I don't want to get into it too much, there are a lot of parallels with the things that she believes or the things that people believe that women, you know, had to be like or had to do in order to be considered well-mannered, raised well. There are a lot of parallels with today as well. There's still people in certain societies who believe the same things. There are still people who believe that, you know, women have to be dainty and laugh in a very gentle manner and not really put themselves out there. It's quite despicable, but, you know, I don't know why there's so much emphasis on women being very ladylike.
And also the woman back then had nothing in return for being air quotes, accomplished by these standards, because all she would get is, like, a better husband, which arguably was very important. They weren't even able to inherit things from their fathers. Eventually, yeah, you're right. A woman has to be, I mean, even in this day and age, a woman has to be smart and beautiful and well-read, but quiet and a little submissive, but not too submissive. And it's not much different from what it was. So this is not just something that Lady Catherine mentions. It's brought up by Darcy as well. I know we've all fallen for Mr. Darcy, and I get it. I get the appeal, but after going through it again, it's sometimes a little hard to remember why I was so in love with Mr. Darcy. Maybe because I know more and I know better. But yeah, he had very similar expectations of a woman, and what he considered was an accomplished woman. And I love that dialogue that Lizzie says, you know, with all of these expectations, it's surprising you even know 6 accomplished women. Because what is that? They have to be able to
read, write, paint.
Read, write. Yeah.
Play an instrument.
Music.
Yeah. Yep. But I suppose why you do fall in love with Darcy is because he realizes the error in his ways. He does at the end of the book tell Lizzie that he realizes that he's been selfish and arrogant, partly because he was raised that way. He was raised to think that people outside his social circle and his family, you know, were not as important, where he was taught to look down upon them. So he does change. And I suppose that's a good reason as any to, you know, be in love with him.
That's true. But to be honest, maybe this is my own stubbornness. And I guess that's where Pride and Prejudice really like hits me. The fact that they're both so strong-headed. And it's great that they both find their middle ground. But if someone ever came to me and told me, I love you despite my better judgment, there is no way you can go back from that. I'm sorry, but
that was rough. That was really rough.
I don't know how I would be able to, like, sure. I mean, yes, he did change. And you're right, absolutely. Like, he did learn the error of his ways.
I think these were different times, weren't they? I was thinking, what constitutes love for them? It's like they spend, in this era, there's so much of rules that governs how you interact with another person. You can't interact with another person if they're from a different social class. You need to be introduced to them. The only time you can interact with someone that quote-unquote have a crush on is in the presence of other people. Like, a whole bunch of people have to be there. You can't speak to them alone unless you're engaged. So it also makes sense now why they love balls so much, because it's sort of like their dating scene. That's the only time they get to, like, dance with the people that they like, talk to them. Even then, like, most of the time their parents are around, so that's also a little weird. So I think, like, it was a lot more formal back then. So I suppose, like, for us, you know, if someone had said the words that Darcy had said, it's really rough, and it'll take a lot more than what Darcy had done to sort of undo what he said. But I think back in that day, it makes sense why, you know, it was whatever he did come across to Lizzie that he cared, that he had changed his ways.
True. That's true. Yeah, I agree. And I guess it was the change that came about in Darcy back then. It's a huge jump. Like, now there's so much access. If a guy said that to me now, in this day and age, I'd be like, yo, man, where are you coming from? Like, who do you think you are? Get with the time. Back then, it was really hard because, you know, herd mentality, they think a certain way, and they did perpetuate a certain ideology.
Yeah.
So to break out of that ideology on your own is a huge sign of, like, strength that you can. I mean, it's very difficult to show any kind of self-improvement at that time, because you're literally pushing against the thing, the very thing that everyone is telling you.
So I guess it makes sense why Elizabeth Bennet is considered, like, a complex character. Mr. Collins proposes to her despite knowing that, you know, she will have nothing when her father dies. She refuses his advances, which is also why he doesn't really believe her, because he's like, you have nothing to go on, like, really? You can afford to, like, refuse my proposal? So it makes sense. Totally.
Yeah. Maybe I don't hate Darcy. I think I'm going to go back to being in love with him again.
I just looked into my notes, and I want to discuss for a bit about how rich he was. But before that, I just want to point out that in my notes, I actually wrote, Lady Catherine, who was she married to? Was it Sir Nicholas de Mimsey Porpington? And then I realized, wait, that's Nearly Headless Nick.
That's Nearly Headless Nick. I was like,
what's her husband's name? Oh, wait, is it? Oh, it's Sir Lewis, isn't it?
Hold on, I'm just going to do a quick search.
It's Sir Lewis de Burgh, if I'm not mistaken. Not Who Nearly was Headless Nick.
Lady?
Oh my God, I have a question. Was Nearly Headless Nick alive during the Regency era? Oh my God, this is a tangent and a crossover that we need. I'm going to Google that.
Sir Lewis de Burgh, yeah. Oh, let's see.
Oh no, he lived way, way before. He lived in, like, the 1400s.
Oh, that makes sense.
Oh, that's sad. I can totally imagine a crossover where Nearly Headless Nick was alive during the Regency period and he met Lady Catherine. That'd be hilarious.
Oh, that would have been, although I feel like they would have gotten along really well. Maybe it's just me, but I feel like they would have gotten along really well.
Well, I mean, he was a wizard, so
yeah,
he could probably jinx her and she got too annoying. That would be so... Yeah, can you imagine how good that would be? Every time she says something rude, he just like crucio her. Well, maybe not crucio. That's unforgivable.
Whoa, hold on. Hold on.
I don't like her. Okay. Okay, not crucio. I think that back. Kids listening, I'm sorry. Not crucio. What else?
Never maybe crucio Jenny anyone.
Maybe Jenny. I mean, Harry crucios one of the Death Eaters. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I'm going to say that it probably came from a genuine need to use it, maybe.
How? That, whatever that Death Eater was, I think it was Amicus, he spat on McGonagall. He was not about to curse her. Like, I mean, okay, I'm not justifying Harry's actions.
Wait, hold on, hold on. Is this going off into a tangent?
Of course, we have to take a Harry Potter tangent every time.
Okay, cool.
Obviously. Yeah, but okay, so... Short tangent, intermission to our episode. So, like, a lot of times, especially in Deathly Hallows, when Harry used, like, Expelliarmus, I thought it was really childish. But it also makes sense because he is a child. And, like, suddenly transitioning to, like, an unforgivable curse is, you know, it takes a lot of strength, I suppose, and daring. Mm-hmm. But then the juncture at which he uses Crucio, it's just so funny. It's like, you were chased by Voldemort and you used Expelliarmus. But someone spits on McGonagall and you crucioed him? Like, priorities, Harry James Potter. Priorities. Come on.
Look, I mean, valid argument. But the way I see it, right, I just think it's kind of a very last straw kind of moment. Yeah. More than that one action isolated, I think it's just sort of, it was a last straw for him.
It is. And I also think it's... It was just a very sweet depiction of Harry and McGonagall's relationship. Because even later, during the battle, when Voldemort lies and says that Harry's dead, the person who screams the loudest and comes running is McGonagall.
Yep.
So it's just really sweet. So anyway.
It's the best.
We're off our Harry Potter tangent. Prejudice. We're back. So, Mr. Darcy earned £10,000 a year back in the day. That was a lot of money for them back then. Yep. I took the liberty of like converting it to how much it would be at our present day. So, okay.
So like just for some reference, for people that don't know, so Bennett earned about 2,000. I think Bingley earned about 5,000.
Yep, yep.
If I'm not wrong, and Darcy earned about 10,000.
And they didn't work. So Darcy and Mr. Bennett and other people who were considered respectable, they owned lands and they rented it out to farmers. Also, they invested their money in, I don't know, and they also put their money in banks and made money from the interest that it gained. Mm-hmm. So that was considered respectable back then. Like if you had to work, if you were in trade or if you did any other sort of work, it was considered, like it sort of lowered your class a little bit. Which is so unfair, come to think about it. So it just means that if you're born into an aristocratic family, like that only continues by birth. You could invest and go up a class. But yeah, Mr. Darcy's wealth, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So the £10,000, you can adjust it a few ways. If you adjust it according to inflation, which is over all these centuries, price of things just go up. His £10,000 is equivalent to £838,000, which is almost, I think, like $1 million a year. If you choose to adjust it based on labor earnings, because people back then earned less than what people currently earn for the same job, that £10,000 is equivalent to £9.9 million, which is like $13 million. Also, there's another way that you can convert this, factoring that the British economy was a lot smaller back in the Regency era. The population of Britain was only, I don't know, 10 million back then, whereas now it's about 66 plus-ish. So £10,000 back then, if you adjust it to the growth of the British economy now, is equivalent to £61 million a year. And also, bear in mind that this is like the values that Jane Austen has given us is just a small percentage of like interest, which is like maybe 2% interest on the entire capital of his wealth, which means that his wealth in current day would be equivalent to like £3 billion a year, if you consider the entire thing, not just the interest. So
damn, that's insane. So much money.
It makes sense why people were going gaga over him. But yeah, but so something, just like a short tangent into their wealth. It's so interesting how, in terms of inheritance, most of it goes to the eldest son. And like the younger son gets nothing, which is why Colonel Fitzwilliam is essentially poor. He had to go into the army to earn some money. Some people go into the church to earn some money. And it's also important that they marry women who are rich, because otherwise they're going to be poor together. And I think the only instance where we see the inheritance going to a girl is Miss King. The one that Wickham was chasing after initially, before her uncle takes her away. Interesting that it's kind of biased.
Absolutely. Okay, so we realized that we've sort of been going on for quite a while. So we'll be ending this episode right here with Mr. Darcy, our dear beloved.
Darcy.
I don't know. I guess now he's our dear beloved Mr. Darcy, considering he's super wealthy and he did, I guess, figure stuff out. But fear not, we do have a lot more Pride and Prejudice coming up. We will be discussing the rest of the Bennet sisters that we haven't even begun to scratch the surface of. Caroline Bingley, how dare she? just overall. And we will continue with it in our next episode. So do stay tuned for our Triple P, People of Pride and Prejudice,
part two.
So thank you so much, listeners, for listening and putting up with our weird tangents. And we somehow managed to bring Harry Potter into Pride and Prejudice. Thank you so much for listening. And we really appreciate any support and feedback that we get. So do let us know. Both Sha and I, we love it when people message us while they're listening to it, because it makes us feel like we're right there with you. Let us know if you'd like us to share your positive feedback. It'll definitely do lots of good things for us. Please do leave a review on whatever streaming platform you're listening to this on, and leave 5 stars, please, because we need it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Much love. Hugs and kisses. Drink your tea. Toodles, and talk to you soon.